35 years ago today, the Crazy Gang be the Culture Club. Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Same Old Wombles, our season-ending episode. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us who helped put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're by the fans, for the fans, now and forever. My name is Mark Lewis. If you change your mind, I'm the first in line. And tonight's panel for the end of the season features Adam Proctor and Matthew Cooper. On tonight's show, I guess we'll talk about the fans forum, possibly. I'll have some end of season thoughts from everybody if they can bring themselves to talk about football still. And on the 35th anniversary, of course, it would be remiss of us if we didn't have some FA Cup final memories. And one final, some numbers for the season. Welcome to episode 37.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Done what we should for the What's that about being the first in line? What is wrong with you, Mark? There's a 35th anniversary of us winning the FA Cup. Without that, the greatest sporting thing ever to have happened, better than the 66 World Cup, better than anything else that happened, you've gone with that rather than, I don't know, It's a Weird and Wonderful World if you come from Wimbledon, or the Crazy Gang of beating the Culture Club, or anything else from that time. What is your thing?
I started with the Crazy Gang of beating the Culture Club, you muppet. I've had a busy day.
I don't think we've had many Muppets. I don't think we've had enough Muppets in this, to be honest with you. And pleased to have brought that out.
Not enough Muppets in one season. That's obviously the biggest problem there has been about watching AFC Wimbledon in the 2022-2023 season.
I think probably for you, Mark, who likes to shout out Muppet every now and again, what happened is there's been so much Muppetness going on, you couldn't vocalise it. You'd just literally be screaming. It'd be like Tourette's. You'd be screaming at Muppet every 5 seconds.
For those people who don't know, way back at King's Meadow, when the Golden Goals first took off, we did a Golden Muppet. I say we. Somebody else organised it. Didn't tell me about it. And they basically managed to sell tickets for every single minute. I've probably told the story 100 times. They sold tickets for every single one of the 90 minutes. And the idea was that when I shouted Muppet for the first time at the referee, then that was the winner, like a goal, obviously. And so after about 6 minutes, I shouted Muppet. This is like way back in like Ryman Premier Division or Ryman 1, I can't even remember. I shouted Muppet, and then about 25 people stood up and during a break of play and gave me a standing ovation, which is just totally bizarre. So there we go. True story.
We should bring
now I have to ration my Muppets. But who's the biggest Muppet this season? There's a question.
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, there's only one winner, I'm afraid. There's only one winner for me. And it's the player, I can't even say their name anymore, that returned back to their home club and then went out on loan to another club.
And that club then managed to get itself relegated?
Yeah, that's the
Who
one.
Who could you possibly be talking about? It's not the capital of France, by any chance.
Yeah. I mean, what a Muppet.
Uber Muppet, frankly.
Uber Muppet.
That was a bit of a nice invention to keep the last weekend of the season actually quite amusing.
Yeah.
As to how they managed somehow to get themselves relegated.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I've seen all the Twitter stuff afterwards where their chairman was just like being berated in the car park.
Mr. Pete Winkleman, yeah, in the car park.
Winkleman.
With lead piping.
Yeah. Dear me, what a thing.
No, I mean, obviously I saw some of that as well, and I try not to look at any of these things, but I did like the fact that he was being told it's a failed football experiment. I mean, that was quite amusing.
So a weekend without football, gentlemen, are we very happy? Are we actually a little bit more relaxed? Or are we just still rather tied up following the off-field shenanigans that don't actually relate to a Saturday afternoon kicking the ball around?
It's all a bit tiring, isn't it? I mean, I had a very weird experience in the middle of the week. I had to go down to Wimbledon to pick up some posters for my play. That's right, a fans club, 23rd to the 25th of June. Get your tickets now. www.afansclub.co.uk. Anyhow, I had to go and pick up some posters.
3 minutes for the first plug.
But we've had a Muppet and we've had a plug. So I went down there, and on my way, just coming into the ground, I ran into Chris Slaven. And then JJ walked past. So I've started having a chat with him. We're walking.
With the first team manager?
The first team manager. Reputation. And I realised I must have been really tired, because I'm sure I just kept calling him JJ. Like, I'm over familiar. This is the first time he's ever seen me.
Hey, JJ, how are you?
Hey, JJ. It's just like, what is that? Mr. Jackson, John? I don't know. What's this? I mean, so I'm calling him JJ. I'm shouting, JJ. And I've walked up to him and we're talking. So, hi, I've written the play. I just mentioned that. And he says he's taking the players along to see it. Anyhow, I just go to him, mate, are you okay? Because I just wanted to know. I genuinely wanted to know if he was all right, if his mental health was okay as well. But we're talking, and you know, he seems like a nice guy. You know what I mean? And it's really, really difficult when you start to talk to someone, you know, who you've been berating sometimes quite publicly on here. But he seemed like a really nice guy who was really pissed off, and really pissed off with the January window, which we've spoken about numerous times. And I think that really, obviously that did for us. But he was saying that just he'd gone from an hour where they're looking to build up the team to suddenly having to find five players. And that's before the injuries and everything. So I don't know. I mean, I still think some of the decisions that he's made haven't worked in his favour. I think he could have done some other things. Certainly with the Salford game is one that sticks out in my mind, where you could have made a change. As soon as they miss their penalty, you make a change. Do you know what I mean? But, yeah, it's difficult. And I texted everyone to go, I have just met JJ, and you and Mark's come back to me and goes, oh, did you tell him about your rant? So, I mean, I think we're all entitled to be a little bit frustrated and a little bit angry. And football is such a public, such a visceral thing, isn't it? Everyone just gets so emotional and so angry. And some people haven't calmed down over the last few days. Anyhow.
No, and people choose to express it in different ways.
Yeah.
Mr. Adam stroking his chin like Blofeld. So have you calmed down yet, Adam? Are you feeling more sanguine about the end of the season?
Yeah, thankfully, which is good. I'm actually quite enjoying the break. I mean, I was a bit disappointed with, there was lots of people moaning about, obviously, you know, the squad that was put out in the last home game, the fact that Bilair got injured and all this, like, why are we doing this stuff? But, I mean, again, for me, it was just like, it was clear that JJ wanted to have a win at the end of the season at home. And I thought that was a good thing, actually. So, again, it's like, oh, come on, chill, you know, let's just see where we're at. So, yeah, I think I'm optimistic. I'm quite excited about where we might go. Obviously, there's been some changes. We're probably going to see some more. I kind of didn't think I'd bother with any pre-season, but I'm kind of interested in going to a pre-season thing just to see something, see what's changed, what's different. So, yeah, I'm feeling a little less agitated, which is a good thing.
But you shouldn't really laugh, because, of course, you live in Southampton, and Southampton have just been relegated.
They have, yeah.
So feel free to tell all of the Southampton people you know exactly how bitter we still feel about the fact they laughed at us at the Dell when we got relegated. Yeah. My wife is very, very well-mannered and well-spoken, and doesn't speak ill of anyone in the world except for Southampton fans, who she has not forgiven.
No, they were out. Yeah. It was a bit busy.
That's right, Southampton. We really feel your pain.
Yeah, it was busy in town because obviously there was the Eurovisions or whatever and no trains, so it was all a bit messed up, and then they got relegated. So, although the good thing is, because obviously Sunderland is my dad's sort of second team, so he's been enjoying the playoffs, because obviously they were losing to Luton and then they came back, and a couple of friends of mine are Sunderland fans, so... Yeah, I'm not quite out of all the football woods yet.
Not quite yet. So, obviously, at the end of the season, after that final Matt and I and other people, 200 strong, were at the fans forum. And Jackson, amongst other people, was asked some very straightforward, very blunt, very direct questions. Did you ask him about a friend's form, or were you skirting over that one, Matt?
No, I didn't. I didn't ask. I literally had a minute with him. But it's, I find it's really weird. I mean, from being there, and you know, I can understand some frustration at the beginning because, you know, although they clearly said we're going to answer questions that have been sent in online first, and then we'll answer the from the questions that are in the room. Yet the people who are in the room, they want us to like, let's come on, get to us first. When why are you giving us this whole lecture? But they did say at the beginning what they were going to do, and I think it was also made clear again that there was going to be an edited version afterwards. And what I find really weird is that people are really clamouring for a full version of it. But I think what's been sent out and what's been written up as well gives you a really good idea of it. And I mean, like, it is the highlights. I mean, like, the full version of it is, you know, there's a lot of umming and erring and some, you know, bits. I mean, bits aren't particularly relevant or whatever. So I think the club didn't. I don't think they should be berated for that. But everyone went on their backs. And what I find really odd about this is, I think some of the people that are calling for that are the same sort of people that would be saying. Let's sell up. Let's, you know, why do we have this structure? It's ridiculous. You know, they're looking for something within the debate that would go, this is my argument. Someone has said this. It's all rubbish. We should sell up. Okay. But if we sold the club up, there would be no fans forum ever. You would never have another fans forum. You would never have this sort of debate. You would never have the sort of openness or transparency that we have at the moment. And so if things start going wrong under the ownership of someone else, there'd be very little that we could do. We could complain on the match days and, you know, but you couldn't do anything else. The fact that we've got this really open forum, I think is a good thing. And I think probably what was released is probably not a bad thing. I mean, if people want to see the whole thing, fine. I guess the other nervousness is that other clubs get hold of it and people can see what's, you know, see our dirty laundry out in the public. But no, I don't think there was much to find, to be honest with you.
Adam, you weren't there. So do you feel from what you've seen and obviously the two different releases the club have made and transcripts or the partial transcript and obviously all the statements, do you feel the club has shortchanged the fans or you individually as a season ticket holder and so on? Or have they provided appropriate information? Should people actually just get off their back, so to speak?
I don't think they've shortchanged us at all, but I mean, I saw there was a few tweets, and I think one of the tweets said, I see Seymour Wombe was being quiet about this. It's like, what the heck? We don't tweet anything anyway. But I was like, whatever. It's not that big a deal, surely. And I mean, obviously, I mean, I had you guys sending me some messages about what was happening. I read sort of stuff that was on various forums and whatever afterwards. And that gave me enough of an indication as to what had been said. So I don't think I was missing anything. So I don't quite understand why everyone was going mad. And it's still now, there's some, every time, well, I don't know when the last news out was out, but there was a bit of news out. And every time there's someone in the tweets released the full thing, it's like, you know, it's like one of those AGMs. It's probably really boring, the full thing, you know, because there probably isn't anything else you could glean from it. You know, obviously my main thing from it was obviously just the talking about the players at the last dinner. You know, that was what annoyed me the most. The rest of it was just kind of standard fare. You know, I would have, obviously my question was to get some detail about what metrics would be in place for the start of the season. I don't think that was discussed anywhere. I didn't really see it in the highlights, and I'm pretty sure it's not in the full tape. So I'm a bit disappointed that my question was probably answered, but not in as, you know, direct way as I would have liked to give me some ideas. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether, I mean, the only thing I thought, I don't think there's any problem with the edited highlights. I don't know why we wouldn't necessarily release all of it. I don't know what sensitive information there might be other than it would bore people. Because obviously a lot of people moan there's this kind of monologue at the beginning. But I wonder whether it's, I don't know. It was all, they always said it was going to be edited. So unless people think they've edited it to kind of try and stop the chairman looking not so good because there was obviously some conversation about the dogs he owned or something and whatever. You know, that would be boring anyway. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't see. It's just a bit weird, isn't it?
I think people are angry, Adam. This is what it is. People are just angry. I mean, and generally speaking, for a majority of people who come along and watch football, they just want to watch football. They want to watch the team giving as much as they can and winning games. You know, certainly, I mean, if you finish mid-table and you've had, you know, a fairly decentish cup run or something, then people are fine. But the fact we got relegated from League One and finished, what was it, fourth from bottom, people are really angry. And all they want, everyone just wants a side that wins. So, and I think this is part of the problem that we've got, is that a lot of other stuff that we do around the outside is brilliant. You know, our community engagement, all the other stuff that we do, you know, D-Lag, you know, which isn't obviously a Wimbledon thing, but it's associated with the club. There's a whole lot of stuff that we do, which is really, really good. But the truth is, people want to go along on a Saturday and watch their team, you know, perform and ideally win more than you lose.
And let's face it, for 2 years, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that builds up 2 years worth of resentment, 2 years worth of frustration, 2 years worth of people being feeling like they're being let down. If people have come on board during those 2 years, then they may well have not seen us play very well very often. They certainly haven't seen us win very often. And I guess, understandably, based on their individuals, analysis of football, and let's face it, every football fan is a wannabe football manager, aren't they? They look at, you know, Doncaster sacking their manager and bringing a new guy in, and Newport sacking the manager, bringing a new guy in, and Walsall doing likewise, and Swindon doing likewise, you know, Swindon sacking the manager because they didn't get to the playoffs and so on. And all these other metrics, and think, well, they've done it and they've had better seasons than we have, so why on earth hasn't AFC Wimbledon done it? It's like, okay, well, we don't like that. We still don't like that. We're still going to vociferously claim that that isn't good enough. But if we can't do anything about it, then we're going to go after, in a social media rant way, the next responsible people. The Doncaster board have made it very clear that they aren't the people that hire and fire the managers. Never have been, never will be. But they're getting a lot of flack. And obviously the club are taking a lot of flack as well. You know, Danny got lots of positive press and deserved lots of positive press because of how engaging he is, and he's still trying to be engaging, but he's still also getting flack about this matter as well. I don't know the ins and outs of how the decision was made or who made the decision or why the decision was made, but it was an operational decision to do it and to release the information that's been released.
Well, I think the other thing might be, you know, I wasn't there, so I don't know. There was a bit of contention at the beginning, a bit of disharmony. Obviously, some people are upset about the way they were running the structure of the things. You know, we don't want to necessarily be airing all of our dirty laundry at any point when we've had a bad season. People are pretty disgruntled. That isn't going to necessarily do you any PR favours if anyone wants to chop it up or do things. And of course, we'll be looking for new sponsors, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't mind if we edit things so that the pieces of information that wouldn't necessarily be, they don't provide any extra information for fans, and maybe just show a bit of disharmony or disgruntlement that isn't necessary to sort of make public. Because obviously when you put it on YouTube or whatever, you're making it public, you know, and they didn't stream the whole thing, but probably for the same reason, so that it wasn't publicly available. I mean, of course, the other thing, you know, at the end of the day, anyone could have recorded the event when they're in there. You know, it's the same when I'm giving talks at work and whatever. I kind of expect that there may well be students that are just making personal recordings of everything that's said. And I understand that, you know, and that could go public.
And they listen to every word you say, Mr. Lecturer.
They definitely don't listen to every word I say.
but Adam, you make a good point. And probably the truth of the matter is, and my understanding is this, the Fans Forum was a club initiative. It wasn't a DTB initiative, and that's my understanding. So the DTB didn't even really know about it or engaged in it. It was all done from the club. If the club are saying that they're going to send out a version of it, it's probably the best idea is, you know, and maybe in hindsight or uncertainly in future, just do a full version of it. Just send out a full version of it. there wasn't anything in there, I think, that was that hadn't been discussed about or people weren't aware of. I mean, there were some things in there that made me think, and there were certainly things in there that made me think, and these are things that are actually being released, about the attitude of the players and the attitude of sometimes, you know, towards fans on away trips. I just thought, when I heard that, that was appalling. And that is, I find that sort of thing needs to be stamped out straight away. And, in my opinion, I think some of that behaviour is almost a sackable offence, to turn up to certain things, you know, really drunk. So and certainly to dismiss fans who paid hard-earned cash to go away to away trips and then be dismissed. I just think that was, you know, there's a culture in the club which needs to be addressed. And so, Mark, I don't know if we can segue slightly, but what's interesting is the retained list that we've got here. And I think our hands have been tied slightly by those that are on longer term contracts. And I think last season, people would be going, okay, this isn't a bad people to have. But now you look at it and you question it, you go, what can we do? And how can you move some of the players on? Because there are people on this list that I think we would want to move on.
Agree 100%. And that's a very good segue, actually, because you look at the release list and you think, well, yeah, we knew about Marsh. Some of those younger players, one or two of them people might want to keep. Are they going to make a huge amount of dent in the wage bill? Apparently, Marsh was on quite a lot of money, if you believe crazy things online. They may not be crazy. Who knows? I've got no idea. But other than that, no, there are no major big earners. But the reality is, we know about Will Nightingale's contract. But apart from that, I don't know necessarily huge contracts. So I don't know anything about any contract details. But I don't know that any of our players are on particularly high wages. But if they are, relatively high wages for League One or League Two, because if they're ongoing contracts, so Lee Brown would have been signed on a League One contract, not a League Two contract, for example. You know, can you get a Bromley or a aspiring, particularly upward-moving conference club to take these kind of players on that wouldn't necessarily want to move to Chesterfield or somewhere in that neck of the woods, who may well be able to take on the wages-wise, because these guys are based and they have families and commitments and everything else in the southeast of England. Who knows? But obviously, that's the wheeling and dealing that Craig Cope is trying to do, you know? Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I mean, there are, you know, one hopes that we keep hold of Al Hamady. I mean, I think probably that the price we'll ask for him would put people off, to be genuine. You know, because he's had half the season where he's done exceptionally well. But I think you'd be looking, hopefully, to sell him this time next year. And you've got, I'm really not that bothered by people like Bartley or Bendel staying with us, or Mason. I don't know who Josh Hallard is. Mark?
He's another one of the, they were about, the interesting thing, Michael Hamilton didn't get a chance to say very much on the fans forum, but from what I understand, at the end of every season, there are some 17, 18-year-olds who are on, I think they call them scholarship contracts, from 16 to 18, and then they offer them professional contracts. And the last couple of seasons, they've offered four or five players in each of their seasons, so maybe a maximum of 8 or 10 professional contracts for 2 years. So Bartley, for example, was one of those last season, and I think Hallard was another one. Mason was definitely another one, because Mason and Bartley were in the same team that won an under-18 cup last season, not the one that's just finished, the one before that. And Mason's gone on loan to Basingstoke Town, who had done rather well.
Yep.
Obviously hasn't necessarily pulled up any trees on loan. Hallard, I think, was one of those in the same year group, who therefore will have a year's left in his contract and hasn't, unfortunately, due to injuries, had any particular opportunity to progress.
Right.
Where he plays, what he does, whether he's any good, yeah. Couldn't tell you.
I'm genuinely not worried about those players. I'm not. I guess it's the other players who are under the spotlight, people like Woodyard and Pierce and Lee Brown. Not so much about Lee Brown, but you know, and then but those two in particular, and obviously Zach Robinson. Who knows what's going to happen there? You know, do you bring him back into the fold?
I think he's going to be sold. You know, I think they're offering enough to take him because he's been doing really well. I mean, I think from the list, yeah. I mean, the other thing, obviously, the other Twitter storm or whatever, and it's only this blooming podcast that gets me back into Twitter, is that people obviously were complaining that Craig Hope had said about this massive cull. And, of course, there isn't a huge cull of heritage. There's a few players that have been released. We've got a load of players under contract that we have to work with. But I think some of them, it depends who we get in. I guess if some of them don't have any playing time, they're going to start thinking, well, maybe I'll take a wage cut so I can play some football. Do you really want to sit not even on the bench for a season or half a season? It's going to certainly cause you all kinds of problems, I'd have thought, as a professional player. But so I don't know. I think there's still going to be a lot of change. And I think, yeah, people like Zach Robinson, I just think he's gone probably already.
The interesting one with Robinson is obviously he was on loan at Dundee. He got a firm place in the Dundee starting lineup and they ended up a very topsy-turvy game where they were playing the team who were in second and they beat them 5-3. So they were promoted. So they're going to be playing Scottish Premier League football next season against your Aberdeens and your Celtics and your Rangers. Are they going to go the other way? So in Dundee, that's going to be quite an interesting dynamic. But the manager, Gary Bowyer, ex-Blackpool manager, I think, and a number of other clubs in the UK. I don't know where, you know, his situation is professionally and personally, because obviously he's been managing Dundee, which is a long way from home if you're based even in the north of England. He's resigned. He resigned 3 days after the season finished. So basically, Robinson's manager that saw the potential in him, saw faith in him, got him back after we recalled him on loan, and played him all the way through the end of the season, has now left. I've got no idea who's taken over from him. And it's a reasonable job, you'd think, because Dundee is obviously a reasonable-sized city, quite vibrant business-wise, economy-wise at the moment, with some activity going on in the renewable energy sector. Whether or not that totally scuppers Zach Robinson's plans, no idea. Don't have any inside mole on the ground into the playing arrangements of the club, unlike other people I've read online. So, don't know.
That's interesting. I wonder what's happened to the... I can only imagine that Gary Bowyer's got somewhere else to go, isn't he not? He must
possibly
have.
Or actually a fundamental is, you know, you don't know people's personal life, but, you know, if we were offered X amount of money to work in a certain place, you may say, I'll work in that certain place, but I'll only do it for a limited amount of time. And then if you've got a partner or a child or whatever, then you say, well, okay, am I going to up sticks and change things? I mean, from Robinson's point of view, he's probably a young single guy in his early 20s who's gone up to Scotland and seen someone like Ryan Sweeney do very well up there as well, and you know, make a career of it. So it doesn't really necessarily matter. But if you are a more mature manager who's got children in school potentially, or, you know, obviously I don't know his private situation, that may not be something which is sustainable to do.
So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Zach, but I'm assuming that a lot of these players that were on our retained list are going to go out on loan. And we're all assuming that Jack Curry is going to go. Although I'm not sure now that we probably would have got a lot more money for him back in January than we will do in the summer, I think.
At the end of the day, it looks like there was only one club in for him before.
Yeah.
More clubs come and then you have got potential. I mentioned before that I heard the initial offers for Ridoni started at the beginning of the transfer window, which is not for another few weeks, by the way. It's not until the beginning of June. But the initial offers last summer for Ridoni were rather low and we managed to negotiate them upwards. But here's our team that started the first game of the season, Gillingham 2-0 home win, which finished off by Curry's diving header at the far post. Nick Zanev, Will Nightingale, Alex Pearce, Lee Brown, Chris Gunter, Jack Curry. So three at the back to start with. Midfield, George Marsh, Harris Magema, Ethan Chislett, Iowa Sal, and Josh Davidson.
Yeah.
You could quite easily, straightforwardly, make a case that no more than two of those players will start for us in the first round next season. Not because I have any insider knowledge at all, but just in terms of some have left.
Yeah.
Different scenarios. Obviously, Gunter's retired.
Interesting the rumour that I love these rumours. But interesting the rumour going around that Nick Zanith could be moving up to the Championship to be a reserve goalkeeper.
Again, it's on the face of it, it seems like a ludicrous rumour from a footballing perspective. But people do that, you know. I mean, I was listening to the radio yesterday. They're talking about Daniel Bentley. He was manager. He was a goalkeeper at Southend a few years ago. And then he went to Bristol City. And now he's number two at Wolves. So that's some really quite interesting geographical moves. He played his second game of the season for Wolves yesterday. And Wolves are mathematically safe. So I guess they're just giving him a run out at the end of the season. But I'm imagining whatever he was earning at Bristol City compared to what he was earning even as number two at Wolves, you know, it's chalk and cheese. And Zanev's not going to be on the same level of wages at all, but it's the same similar equivalent. I don't know who it would be, but obviously Reading have been relegated. But if it's someone like that somewhere in the southeast who offer him a gig, that means he hasn't got to fly or travel up to Preston or, you know, somewhere particularly far from home.
I think, to be honest with you, I guess you take your chances. If someone comes in and says, whoever it is, here's X amount of money, you'll be, you know, second choice in the Championship, but you might get some games in whatever cups there are, and it's going to double your money or whatever it is. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
and like absolutely. You say, you know, you take a chance. I mean, and the truth is that I think that probably for a lot of us, we're seeing that our number one for next season is probably going to be Broome, don't you think?
Quite potentially. But then the other question is, are there experienced goalkeepers who you wouldn't necessarily want to depend on for 46 league games that might still knock around and actually be an experienced backup to play the cup games and also keep Broome as a number one choice, honest, as they say? You know, I certainly don't think Broome let us down when he played.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a technical.
I think, we let the guys. Unfortunately, after the last stands, we're literally taking the mickey out of Zanef during the game and sarcastically cheering when he managed to get a clearance. And that's just not a big or clever state of affairs. But you can understand people, fans, doing that on a basic level because he gave them cause to do so, which is very sad, but factual.
I believe that someone once called him a confidence keeper. I have a recollection of that being said somewhere.
Not a lot of confidence being shown at all by anyone in our team. And I guess, therefore, we have to just restart. You know, no more heroes anymore, as they say.
Yeah, that's it. But I mean, my feeling is that we probably need to get rid of, from the retained list, we probably need to get rid of three or four, maybe more, of those players, so you can bring in the people that you want.
I think we're just going to have to bring them in anyway and hope they displace those individuals and they choose to go elsewhere because they're on contracts and whatever. So
I know, but it's a money thing, Adam. I mean, the problem is, can we afford to bring in X number of players if we can't shift on some others? That's the issue. So you're right. I mean, Craig Cope's got an interesting job, hasn't he? Which is not just about identifying players and bringing them in, but also about, you know, conversations with other clubs saying, do you know what? I think you might be quite interested in so-and-so or whoever. I mean, it's interesting to know what that role is. And obviously Andy Thorne. And see what I'm going to do? I'm going to segue here again. This is brilliant. Andy Thorne coming in as the as our head of recruitment and the head of scouting. And everyone was, they were all really excited about, you know, where we are compared to this time last season. You know, people are quite excited about, you know, what we potentially can do, which I'm hoping we can get some really decent deals. I mean, I know I'm excited. I mean, I know that people are saying, you know, we try and get away from our history sometimes, and maybe sometimes that feels like it holds us back. But I was just really thrilled when I heard that Andy Thorne was going to be part of it. And, you know, I saw him there on at the fans forum, managed to get a picture. He's certainly got a healthy appetite.
He's not necessarily at his fighting weight that he was either when he played first time around in 88 or when he came back to Celeste in the early 90s.
Yeah. I asked him, I guess because I'm a little bit starstruck. It's weird, isn't it? You know, like when you're talking about players like that, Andy Thorne, I mean, a little bit starstruck going, people must ask you all the time about the 88 Cup final. He was like, no.
Really?
He was saying people don't really ask about it. Well, I guess where he's travelled and what he's done, he's not been around our area, has he, particularly, hasn't he? I think he's been up north doing stuff.
Yeah, he's been like Chester way, I think.
Yeah, so he's not, you know, I think he's probably known as a scout or the former manager of Coventry or something, you know, rather than number six in the 88 side. And come on, who today has watched highlights from their 88 Cup final?
I have to confess I didn't, because I was off doing the other thing, as I mentioned earlier. But I'm like, you do it all the time. You do it very regularly. I've got a framed photograph. I don't know whether I've ever showed you guys this, but it's like a birthday present I think I got for my 50th, which is, it sits in my study. And it's like celebrations after the game. It's like a miniature of the winning goal with all the Liverpool players in there missing Sanchez's header and Guabalar trying to vainly realise he can't get to it. And then it's the next morning. Yeah. So did you guys get to Wimbledon the next morning?
Yeah, I got to Wimbledon the following morning. You know, we just got there as quick as possible. And what was hilarious, it was just packed. And no one thought it was going to be packed. It was just absolutely mental. For me and Niall, we were based over in South East London, where I always think this is, you know, and we were kids. We were what? Yeah, it had been 16, something like 15, 16. And so we weren't going to pubs and stuff like that. So we didn't go back to Wimbledon. There's been loads of stuff that was posted on today on socials about people being in Wimbledon and doing. And I'd love to have done that, but the whole thing was just amazing. It was an amazing experience. And at that age, you didn't think you'd lose. That was the weird thing, because I'd supported us and we'd gone up and up and up and into the top division. I didn't think it was unusual. And I didn't think, I didn't think we'd lose.
See, that's funny, because I just remember going for the experience, because I'd seen England play a couple of times. I saw Hoddle's debut in 85 at Wembley. Otherwise, I'd never been to Wembley. So I was just excited to go for the experience. And, you know, it was like father and son type thing. I don't know why my sister didn't come, because she came with us normally to games, but just me and my dad. And obviously we didn't realise what rite of passage it was. And I wore my shirt that I'd first got in the second season, like the big blue collars, yellow with blue, big blue collars. Don't know how it fitted me, considering I was like 6'5" or something. But anyway, and I got a Liverpool rosette that was given by a Liverpool fan afterwards, because he told us we deserved to beat them. But I didn't go with any preconceptions, except that I thought we would lose, because, as I say, I'd fallen for the whole media hype, and there was no internet, and there was no Twitter and all that type of social media stuff. So therefore, it was like, oh, the papers say you're going to lose, so you're going to lose. You idiot. You know, what are you even doing bothering turning up? But they there was a thing on the radio the other day talking about which football matches or which sporting occasion has ever aged you, even if you've won or lost. You know, and I thought the last 10 minutes of that game, especially when Steve Nicol put their header in, and I was convinced it was going under the bar, not over the bar. I was only like 17 in a bit, but yeah, I aged quite a lot. But the mad thing was, I was in the middle of A-level revision, so I'm a little bit older than you guys. So I planned it all out in my very anal, probably OCD way, without realizing that I literally had a schedule every single day what I was going to study. And I took a day off for the cup final, and I was supposed to do more revision on the Sunday, which of course I couldn't do. Because here's my pub story from Wimbledon. Because Wimbledon's my town centre. I walked through there this afternoon, actually, on the way home. So I've been going in there and out there, and, you know, using the chip shop and everything else. And we went to try and get a drink in the Alex. And my parents used to go to St. Mark's Church, which is around the corner from the Alex. It's actually where I got married. And we tried to get into the Alex, and the Alex was full. And the Alex is just down from the station by Ely's, if people know the bit of Wimbledon. And there were about 150 people standing outside on the road. It's a normal road that runs all the way through Wimbledon up to Wimbledon High Street and Wimbledon Village. But no cars were getting through whatsoever. We were just totally mobbed out there. So I tried to get in to get a drink because I thought I could get away with it because I was almost 18. And I had been drinking since I was 14 in Wimbledon Village, because that's what you did in that neck of the woods. And my dad tried to get a drink. And in the end, we took about 45 minutes to get a beer. And I had 2 pints of shandy because I wasn't interested in drinking because I was so sunburnt and so completely, utterly drenched and parched and everything else. But the maddest bit of the whole story, which was then reported the next day in the Times, or you find it online somewhere, was that about 10:30 that night, there was a bunch of drunken revelers walking away from Wimbledon Station. And as they walked away from Wimbledon Station down Wimbledon Broadway towards South Wimbledon, a bunch of people came from this Wimbledon Theatre because they'd just been to see the performance at Wimbledon Theatre. That performance was the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So you had, for those people who don't know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, various people dressed up, men and women, in basques and tights and suspenders and stockings and everything else. And the media didn't know this. So the media that had been sent down to Wimbledon Village to report on these things for the Sunday papers the next day were reporting that these drunken football fans who were somehow, for some bizarre reason, dressed up in suspenders and stockings. True story. Check it out online somewhere.
That's fantastic, Mark. And you've covered yourself there. You've covered yourself because...
I was not one
of
them.
No, it was you, and it's fine. I mean, it's an elaborate story. Dress up, mate. It's up to you. You be who you want to be.
I was at home. I downed a bottle of wine in one go and felt very, 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 very ill. So when you were there the next morning, I was trying to walk from my house, which is about 10 minutes from where I grew up, 10 minutes walking to Wimbledon. And the further I walked, the more I smelled hot dog stands. And I got within about 100 yards of hot dog stand, round the corner from the Prince of Wales pub. And I just vomited all over the street because I was still so hungover from the day before.
That's what we stepped in. I just remember, coming out of Wimbledon Station because we travelled, we got down on the train and just turning left towards, you know, because that was where the town hall was. Now a Tesco. And it was just packed. It was heaving and trying to work your way through it. And those crowds are just crazy. And then staying there for all of the, you know, being presented by the players and having the bus come through. It was just the most amazing experience. And one I'd hoped I would relive, I'd have other experiences of.
Maybe you will.
Other experiences of winning like the FA Cup or the league. And we came so close. What was it? 96, 97. And it's just, we'll have to let a little bit of time now to win the, what's it called? The Papa John's Trophy.
Oh, we'll probably win League Two before we win that, but who knows? Adam, were you not there? Did you miss all this life experience?
No, I wasn't there because we'd just moved basically to the Isle of Wight from London. And so my dad was not going to take me from the Isle of Wight to Wembley. So
part timer.
Yeah. So my dad went. So, yeah, I mean, he... so he went and he enjoyed it, you know, and obviously had a great day out and was there. And I don't know exactly whether he spent the whole weekend there or not. I know that for the semi-final before that, he travelled back on the ferry with Gerry O'Rourke and had a conversation with him about what might happen, etc. So that was quite funny. So because at that point he was obviously on the island. That also is, I think, related to the fact that then Wimbledon went to play some games on the Isle of Wight because of that connection. And so I saw them then, but I don't really even remember that, to be honest, because I'm a little bit younger than the rest of the people on this podcast.
The same old, not some old Womble.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah.
Middle-aged Womble, yeah.
So I was, I was probably one too young to probably have been taken at that point, I suppose, all that way from then a long way away. But I remember watching it. I've got it on VHS tape and all that kind of stuff. And
VHS. Wow.
I know exactly.
And then a few years later, there was some auction where some crazy guy called Ivor Heller put a very prized possession of his up for auction. And then some even crazier guy decided to bid a silly amount of money.
Yes. Well done, Mark.
But yes, indeed, I am still married. That is still over my mantelpiece. And we did add to our mortgage. Yeah. Right, I'm going to wrap us up slowly there because that's a positive note and there hasn't been enough positive notes to mention.
No, actually, Mark, just before you wrap up, in terms of positive stuff, right, and I think this is really important because I don't think our fan base, I'm pointing now, Mark's like, just because that's how I, when I get excited, I start pointing. No, but I think it's really important is that what a lot of our fans are not appreciating right now is we are, okay, we got relegated, et cetera, et cetera. But we are now in a position where we have all these positions filled with real people who know their jobs, who are looking at the team and who are going to think about who we're going to get in, who's moving on. I actually think we're a really positive place. We've restructured a few things. We've got all the place, all the people in place that we wanted to be in place. Sure, we've had a bad end to the season and we've discussed about why that is. So I actually think it, if we see some really positive moves over the closed season, which I hope we will because we've made all the right choices, then we could have a really fantastic new season in League Two. So I am excited actually about what's going to happen next. So that's my wrap up actually for it because I just thought it's really important that actually I think we're in way better place than we were. We've got Plough Lane, we've got all these awesome people in place. I think we can make some really key decisions now. So I'm quite excited. So people can stop moaning at the Don's Trust board for things that they've got no control over, which would be good.
Just want to get everybody on board. Get everybody on board moving in the same direction because everybody wants the best for their club. They don't necessarily express it all as eloquently as each other. But, you know, fans are allowed to express their dissatisfaction because there's been, unfortunately, too much to be dissatisfied about. But Adam's right. There are lots of good things in the club, in and around the club. All the other organisations that are associated with the club are trying to do things as quickly, efficiently and effectively as they can. They're going to make mistakes along the way. People have to be honest and bear with them and realise they're human beings just trying to do the best that they can. And as human beings, they're going to be fallible, unfortunately. But yes, we obviously want a group of football supporters and coaches and so on and backroom staff that we all believe in and we all want to support rather than getting any upheaval. And there's been far too much upheaval of late. And far too much off the field to concentrate on, and we want to be able to concentrate on the field. It doesn't mean we're going to gloss over anything by any means. And we've never been on this pod asked or expected or told the type of party line that we should trot out, because that's not what we're about. We're just blokes.
Oh, I want to be told a party line. I want someone, come on. I want all the club to love me and give me loads.
That's you and your ego, my friend. It's nothing to do with anything else. I just wanted to say, genuinely, thank you to Adam, thank you to Niall, thank you to Alex, thank you to very long-serving, faithful, friendly.
So that's fantastic, Mark. You got to say the thank yous again because your internet literally cut out where I think you were probably thanking Niall.
Yeah. Don't thank Niall at all. Thanks,
I think there's one person
Niall.
You forgot again.
Thank you, Niall. Right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, the reliable internet server. Thank you to Martin, who joined us for one individual Same Old Wombles pod when we happened to interview Danny Macklin. Thank you, Danny Macklin, for coming on that one time. Thank you to George Jones, who's been on a few times. Ray Armfield's been on with us as well. Thank you to everybody and anyone else who has contributed and sent us questions or ideas or suggestions. We generally value them. Hopefully our technology can improve next year so we can actually get some more individuals on as well, because we want to engage as much with other people rather than just being our idea. I appreciate greatly all the regular contributors, because we know that coming on a Monday night, as we normally record, after a game, when the game has been turgid and awful and we've let a lead go time after time after time after time, it's not easy, it's not big, and it's not clever. So thanks to everyone there. Listeners, however many and however few there may be, because we just started this as a bit of a laugh with our friends to generally chew the cud about being a Wombles fan. Fingers crossed we can improve. Fingers crossed we will get some suggestions to how we can improve. And fingers crossed we'll be back for the new season at some point with some other interviews and maybe pre-season if we're as enthusiastic about pre-season as Matt and Adam seem to be already.
Whoa. Adam
is just Adam. And speaking of Adam, one final some numbers of the season. Adam's number is number 48.
Is that it's better not be like the number of games in a season?
No, that's 46.
So stupid. Ah, oh, so close. 48.
Yeah.
That's definitely not the number of goals.
Yes, it is. Number of goals scored this season. That's it.
See? Wow, that's more than
well
I thought.
Done. Congratulations.
Well done.
Okay. And Matt's number is number 20.
I'm disappointed, Mark, because I thought mine was going to be 36.
What's 36?
That's the minute Laurie Sanchez scored in the cup final.
Of course it is. Very good. Yes,
oh, my
goodness. No,
what's 36? It's 20.
20.
Is that number of defeats?
It is the number of defeats this season, sadly. Yeah. Sadly. Yeah. I thought, however bad it was, we weren't going to quite manage 20, but then we managed to lose to Grimsby, even though they had nothing to play for in the last game either. So there we are. That's been the same old Wombles. That's been our first season. Fingers crossed we'll come back for season two, the difficult season, as they say, the difficult album.
Yeah.
But hopefully, fixtures, I believe, are out on the 23rd of June. If you can tear yourself away from football for a few weeks, then that's great.
Bye,
Matt's
got
to go. Adam's got to go. Thank you to everybody. We've been the same old Wombles, and we'll see you very soon. Thank you and good night.